Hail Dictinus, grant us clear voices, strong sound, and good reads. Attitude is the biggest hurdle to accessibility. Welcome to Accessibility Solitary Edition, the 263rd episode of Three Pagans and a Cat. Our opening today is courtesy of attorney and author Dr. Kalyan C. Kankanala. Our opening and closing music is credited as Frostwald's Alternate by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com and licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0. You may call me Ode.
Merry meet. My name is Gwyn, Ode's mother.
I guess we're going to go straight into housekeeping.
Yep. I don't really have anything.
Yes, because it is the first recording of the month.
Yes.
So even though just last recording we read the patron names, we are going to read them again now.
Yes, we are.
Okay, so for starters, there are 35 kittens. Thank you, kittens.
Love you, kittens.
24 cats, and their names are Akalagus, Nora, Stephanie Danielson, Annalise Scharfenberger, Ivanir, Renjamin, Tiffany Kozash, Ebby, Nikki Norcross, Renee N., Amber Stark, Caitlin McLaren, Annabelle Lee, Rose Shepherd, Candy Russell, The Dryad, Maddie Kuhns, Kai Oakenshield, Elisa Durka, Kelly Burt, Shakora, Rebecca Hillman, Quinn Ann ASMR, and Cindy Barrick.
We love you, cats.
Thank you, cats. There are 40 hunters, and their names are Thumper Daytime, Xena White Owl Rhea, Heather Doyle, Ames of Ashland, Amara Sapphire Wolf, Dwyer, Sarah Goff, Leanne Gee, Scout, Lisa N., Annie Ray, Tom Warfel, CJ Kaufman, Hexaluna, Accipiter, Cameron Grant, Ashley Ann, Don Taylor, Maharet, Talia Franks, Crimson Ryan, Druidicart, Mach2556, Alicia Noble, Roanoke, the Wiccan Wizard, Samwise the Blonde, Goddess Incognito, Rhiannon M. Gray, La Petite Poison, Loriana Lee Knapp, Ryan Hopkins, David Dash of N. Keys, Chris Calibri, Sky Bierce, Sarantha Odinson, Whispers of the Grove, Alyssa Addy, Dahlia Darge, Jessica Jones, and Charles Howison.
We love you, hunters.
Thank you, hunters. There are 6 tigers, and their names are Yuki Quinn, Around Grandfather Fire, Weavers of the Web ATC, Kelly and Jim, Amanda Hicks, and Crystal of Apothecary Tees.
We love you, tigers.
Thank you, tigers. We have 5 leopards, and their names are Michaela Bell-Persh, Jody Cozy, Luna, Ellen Veals, and Gary Bearstorm.
We love you, leopards.
Thank you, leopards. And we have 3 jaguars. And their names are Silver Wolf Arrow, Nolan Hayes, and Justin Stanage.
And we love our jaguars. That never gets old.
Nope.
At least not for us. Maybe for you all.
It's always fun for us. Yep. We do a joke once, and then we do that joke over and over and over again, exactly the same way, forever.
That's true.
That's just who we are as people. Also, for housekeeping, remember that we have the off-week presentations being done by the Pride. That's happening on the Discord. I'll put a link to the Discord on this episode's description again. Mm-hmm. And next week's off-week is going to be run by Githa, and it's going to be about brewing.
Ooh.
So that should be interesting.
That should be interesting.
And Elle says, Jaguar has wormed its way into their vocabulary. I think we got that from commercials.
We did.
From old car commercials.
It was Tom Hiddleston talking about Jaguars. And I loved it so much, I just couldn't help it.
Yeah. So that's why we do that.
Yep.
I think that's it for housekeeping.
Yep.
Okay. Then I think so.
I don't think there's anything else.
I don't think so. Other than Ramadan started. So Ramadan Mubarak to people who celebrate Ramadan.
Indeed.
But I think that's it for housekeeping. So we are house kept. And
where is it?
You didn't bring your tiny room. I'll go get it for you.
Okay. We are house swept.
Very funny because they can't see you doing that.
I know. I'm going to show it again.
Are you going to take a photo?
I'm going to take a photo. Okay. You can take a photo.
Okay. Hang on. Let me get you your little camera app. Okay.
Ready?
Yep. There you go.
Now I'm happy.
You can put that proof on Patreon.
That's right.
You have a tiny broom that you use to house sweep.
I have a tiny broom that I use to sweep.
All right. Amara says, I love y'all. Thank you. We love you too.
Yes, we do.
Today's topic, confused mom, so I will try to explain it.
Yes, well.
So I was thinking about the fact that when we usually talk about accessibility in pagan spaces or in magic spaces, we're talking about how to include someone who has an access issue into a group setting, right? Mm-hmm. So we're talking about like how to make group rituals more accessible, how to make events like convocation more accessible. And those are really, really super important things, obviously.
Yes, they are. Mm-hmm.
And we reinforce everything we've ever said about it, mm-hmm. make those things more accessible.
Yep.
But I was thinking about the fact that, like, even if you have no access issues yourself mm-hmm. right now, mm-hmm. if you live long enough, you probably will eventually have at least one access issue, mm-hmm. if not multiple access issues. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about the fact that most of our audience is solitary, and, like, Gwyn and I are mostly solitary, mm-hmm. except for when we go to things like convocation. And sometimes something that used to work for you might stop working for you, and you will need to replace it with something.
That's right.
So I wanted to talk about how to sort of translate those ideas of accessibility from mm-hmm. group settings to individual settings. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense now that I've explained it that way?
Well, you've explained it to me a couple of times now, so yes, it does. And thanks for calling me out on that. No, you know, I understand. Yeah, it does make sense because I am experiencing a few
right. We talked about that
issues
too.
Myself. As you know, as I get older, mm-hmm. I have some mobility issues mm-hmm. that do affect how I work through my private practice.
Yeah,
and it does affect you, and you don't think about it. Is the thing?
Yeah.
I think that's why I was like, what? Because. Because it's not something I really think about mm-hmm. that I am being inhibited in my practice
right.
because of a physical issue or any other kind of issue. It just, I guess it didn't occur to me because I think of it in that wider scale,
yeah.
that broader scale of public ritual mm-hmm. or group ritual and how you include people who may not be able to do certain things, mm-hmm. but you want them to be part of the activity. So it just took me a little while to go, oh, yeah, that's a good point.
I think there's also, like, a little bit of a, Amara is an ambulatory wheelchair user. Good to know, Amara. I hope you will have thoughts to share here. I also thought, like, it seems like there's maybe sort of a different perspective to take between mm-hmm. like group accessibility issues and individual accessibility
right.
issues, right?
Right.
Because a group accessibility, the issue is trying to make the activity that you have established mm-hmm. accessible to someone who has an access issue for mm-hmm. it, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're doing a circle dance and you have someone who's in a wheelchair, you want to find some way to incorporate that person into the circle dance, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Ideally. That's what you want to happen.
Right.
But an individual access issue may not be like, well, I want to be able to do this thing anyway. It may be, how do I replace that thing mm-hmm. with something that is easier right. for me to do, like that will take less resources for me to do? Mm-hmm. Or it may be, how do I perform this task mm-hmm. in a way that is functional for me, mm-hmm. even if it wouldn't make sense to someone outside of my specific circumstances?
Right, right. And when we were talking, I, you know, started going, oh, this is a really good point for myself that I'd not really thought about it. Mm-hmm. I think it just was an instinctual thing that I did. Mm-hmm. I didn't really like granularize it down to
right.
what the process is and what I'm doing. But in several of my practices, there's hand gestures mm-hmm. when I'm doing a ritual, especially for Hakati. And When I started honoring Hakati back in 2018, I think it was.
I think so, yeah.
Some of the hand gestures that are part of the practice for specific rituals, I didn't have a problem with, mm-hmm. right? But 6 years on, my hands are much stiffer than they used to be. You know, I have a little arthritis going on, mm-hmm. and I have pain in my hands, and there's certain things my fingers don't want to do anymore.
Yeah, I know you've lost some grip strength.
Yeah, I've lost some grip strength. Doing, you know, holding
the
your finger,
three fingers.
Like the three fingers. Yeah. Sometimes that can be very difficult for me.
Could you do the way Europeans do the three
that's
fingers?
A little hard, but
yeah.
You know, I could probably make it work, but it you know, it's not comfortable.
Right.
So unconsciously, when I realized, oh, I can't do this, I just do a flat palm. Mm-hmm. And it didn't occur to me that was me adapting
exactly
this particular practice to myself in my, because I'm just, it's solitary. I don't work with anyone.
Mm-hmm. So there's nobody to judge you.
There's no one to judge me. Or even when, like, I was watching a Hakati symposium yesterday, mm-hmm. and there were several rituals that were in it, and I was at work through most of it, so I had to just kind of watch it and then, you know, going to listen to it later. Mm-hmm. But
the recording.
Yeah. But I was at least part of it. It was a very interesting experience. But at the final ritual, I was at home, mm-hmm. so I could participate in that. And that's when, because we'd had, you know, the discussion about, you know, accessibility and mm-hmm. stuff, I realized there's some things that I have done in the past that I can't do anymore. And that was the hand thing.
Yeah.
Luckily, that wasn't an issue in the ritual that I was a part of online last mm-hmm. night. Yeah, that is definitely something I've had to adapt in my own practice.
Had to just adjust the way you approach something. Mm-hmm.
I kind of look at it like when you're doing yoga.
Yes.
You know, you adapt certain poses if you are not physically able to do them.
Yeah, if you're not stretchy enough or whatever, you can make adjustments.
You can make adjustments. And so I think I just have been doing some of these things naturally mm-hmm. without thinking about it.
Yeah, just like, of course I'll make adjustments to whatever works for me. Yeah. But I know there are a lot of people, especially people who are new to their practice, who aren't comfortable making those kind of adjustments, right? Because mm-hmm. they feel mm-hmm. like, well, it's been written down this way.
Yeah.
Or it was taught to me this way. Mm-hmm. So I have to always do it this way. Mm-hmm. And then if you develop an access issue that you didn't have in the past, especially, it can be really difficult, I think, to, like, what do you do with that?
Yeah, yeah. I will say that there were, you know, probably in the beginning when I first realized, oh, I can't do these hands gestures anymore, I was like, is this going to be a problem?
Right. You know? Well, and because especially with Hakati,
we had
that experience way back when you first started working with her, right. of she was being really picky with you about how things were mm-hmm, performed. Mm-hmm.
Except it was things that she and I worked on. It wasn't parts of the ritual necessarily. Mm-hmm. It was like
she wanted certain kinds of ritual cleanliness.
Cleanliness
from you
and things like that. And she made that very clear. But like specific ritual postures were not necessarily part of that. But yeah, there were definitely some things she was like, we're going to do it this way.
Uh-huh.
But now she's, you know.
She's more relaxed.
She's more relaxed. Well, because I've been working with her and honoring her for 6 years now.
Uh-huh, yeah.
It's interesting when you really stop to think about it and go, oh, yes, I have had to adapt some things because there are physical changes to me as I grow older.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
and that's what I think is the like people think of access issues as like either you have it or you don't, but that's just not the case. Like you are very likely to develop access issues over time.
Mm-hmm. Like I don't know if now because you know I have a hip,
right? Yeah, Gwen has a hip now.
I have a hip now. I don't know that I could participate in a vigorous
like a circle dance
anymore.
Yeah.
I think that it's entirely possible that it could be an access issue for me. Mm-hmm. Even in my own personal private practice, I used to like to twirl and
do a lot of dancing
because I did belly dance for mm-hmm. several years. That's a little bit more challenging for me now,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I have to find other ways to raise energy or be in the moment.
Yeah. So one of the things that I sort of put together while I was thinking about this subject was, like, I was going through examples, right? So I was saying to myself, like, okay, well, what would I replace a circle dance with? If I had a mobility issue where I couldn't do a circle dance of any kind, what would I replace that with? And I was going through, like, a series of hypotheticals like that. And the conclusion I came to is that at least when I am thinking about access issues and mm-hmm. how to address potential access issues on like a personal basis, what I'm doing is I'm taking task X, which is an inaccessible task,
mm-hmm.
determining what its purpose or function is,
mm-hmm.
so why a task X is being performed here or would be performed here,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm replacing it with a parallel task Y that performs the same function as task X.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, like a circle dance, the purpose is to raise energy
mm-hmm.
And to like enter a little bit of an altered state.
Mm-hmm.
So thinking about it, what I probably would replace a circle dance with if I had mobility issues that prevented me from doing one is I would replace it with chanting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because chanting can be very,
exactly,
very
powerful. It can perform those same functions. Mm-hmm. It can raise energy. It can help you enter an altered state, especially if you're performing the same chant and it has the right kind of rhythm and you mm-hmm. perform it over and over again. It hits those same functions and mm-hmm. purposes as a circle dance does mm-hmm. for me. Mm-hmm. So I think part of it is just thinking about that, and that forces you in a way to think about what task X is even for, mm-hmm. right? Because a lot of the things we do in magic, and we've talked about this before in other mm-hmm. episodes, mm-hmm. A lot of the stuff we do in magic, we just do out of habit.
Yeah, without really knowing why did that start happening in the mm-hmm. first place? What mm-hmm. is the root behind it? That's exactly. Like, we were discussing it about the hand gestures, and I said...
Yeah, I was like, why? So I was asking Gwen, because I had, like, come up with this formula for myself, basically. So I was like, okay, so what is the purpose of the hand gestures? Mm. So we can figure out what you could replace it with. And she was like, you know what? I don't know.
It's true. I don't know. They just said, you do this. And I was like, okay. But I don't know. I don't remember. It's been 6 years now.
Right.
So I don't remember if there was a specific explanation. I think some of it may have been based on mudras or on finger positioning mm-hmm. to represent the elements or
right.
things like that. I don't remember specifically at this point, but it'll be interesting to go back and go, okay, why do we do this particular gesture? It was just like with one particular ritual that is an annual ritual, performed by Hecateans who are part of the Covenant of Hecate, is that, we do it all on the same day and the stuff. And so I just got a ritual that just said, okay, you do this
You
here.
Do these things in
you
this
do
order.
You do these things here in this order. But I don't think there was an explanation.
Of why you do
of
those
Of why
things.
You're doing these particular hand positions or, uh-huh. I'll have to go back and look.
What the purpose is, what the meaning is.
Yeah, I don't know if that was explicitly explained.
Yeah. So that's something that I think is really useful to consider when you're addressing this kind of thing is like, the first step is to figure out why you want to do task X in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have any reason to do task X, maybe you just don't replace it with anything, right? Maybe you just cut it out.
You're like, well, I don't know why I'm doing this to begin with. Uh-huh. So
if it's difficult, maybe I just don't do that part, period. Like, maybe it can just be removed wholesale. Maybe it can just be cut out.
It's entirely possible.
You know, yeah. Minimalist magic.
Minimalist
can just cut out all the
ritual,
fluff.
Whatever works, you know? Now, it looks like we've got some really good...
Yeah, we do.
Comments.
So let's see. L says, low spoons, human here. So if I want to do writ, I got to just do it when I happen to have time and energy. Can't wait for a particular moon phase or
mm-hmm,
whatever.
Mm-hmm. So adapting your time to how you're feeling, what your spoons level is.
What your spoon level is, what your vibes are, mm-hmm. whether you just remember it. Frequently, I'm like, I'm going to do this ritual on blah blah day. Mm-hmm. And then blah blah day comes around mm-hmm. and I have completely forgotten that I even planned to do a ritual, much less what my plan was.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which means either I can not do that ritual ever, or I can do it whenever I remember it.
Right, right, exactly. That kind of happens with me from time to time, because, with Hecate and witchcraft, there's the dark moon, and there's the new moon, mm-hmm. and there's the full moon, and I'm lucky if I get one of those in there.
You get any, just get a moon.
A moon. If I get any of them in there, I'm doing good.
Yeah, and so many rituals are like calendar bound.
Yes.
And I think I understand why we do that as humans. Like, humans really like schedules. I really like schedules. I'm not great at
keeping them.
Well, I'm great at like a daily or like a weekly schedule. Like, if I do something at the same time.
Yeah.
Every time on like a weekly basis, I will remember to do it.
Yeah.
If I have to schedule something that's going to happen a month from now, I will not remember.
Right. Right.
Like, I am never going to forget that we have podcasting.
Right.
But I am definitely going to forget when someone's birthday is. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, that's just going to happen.
Yep. Unless it's your mother's.
Uh-huh. And I get reminders for that.
Yes, you do. Probably from your brother.
From my brother. And from my phone. And yeah, so I set up my life that I get a lot of reminders for things that I know I'm otherwise going to forget. But I think the part of the reason we like schedules, we like systematizing things, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I also think that the spiritual world doesn't operate on the same kind of time that we do.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't feel like it matters so much.
Mm-hmm.
And admittedly, this could just be I'm bad at keeping track of things, so I don't want it to matter. But personally, I have never felt that it really matters, like what moon phase I do something on, or like if I get the holiday a few days off or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not on the particular feast day, but I'm in the feast week, then it's probably good enough. You know, like the... And like most of those dates are determined by humans for human purposes, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like the gods and the spirits are probably fine if you just do it whenever.
Right, right. I think it also depends on, you know, where you're at in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is a challenge, you know, you need to accommodate
exactly.
to just, what fits for
just
you.
Just adapt around it rather than like beating yourself up
exactly.
for... Like, I know there are people who... So, like, I have a very dedicated ancestor practice, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm really committed to my ancestor practice. It's an important part of my religious experience to me. I know some people who have, like, every month or every week or every day, they make offerings and prayers to their ancestors. Mm-hmm. I cannot do that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a 0% chance of me remembering to do that. When I was first starting out, that was really frustrating to me because I wanted to make my ancestor practice a really important... like thing.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's zero human oversight except for me,
right,
there's a 0% chance of me remembering it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to get cool with just making accommodations for where I put things so that I will remember.
Mm-hmm.
That just whenever I see my ancestor altar, I do a little prayer. Mm-hmm. I make a little offering. You know, when I have my dinner and I'm walking past my ancestor altar, I put a little something in their dish too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is just making sure that my ancestor altar is somewhere I will always see it.
Exactly.
I will constantly be walking past it. Mm-hmm. I will always be, it's in my eye line a lot of the time, so that like when it occurs to me, in the middle usually of doing something unrelated.
Right.
I've just made it a habit to have some engagement with that. And that's the only way that works for me.
Right.
Because
that's,
so like,
that's adapting
exactly.
to what works for you. It's adapting to your schedule. And it's adapting to that particular quirk.
Mm-hmm.
Of,
and like if I put my ancestor altar out of the way.
Right.
This wouldn't work at all.
Wouldn't work.
It would be out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
Like every cup I've ever put down in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. I can attest to this is true.
So it's got to be somewhere that I see it all the time.
Right.
And I had to just be cool with when I remember it is when I do it.
And I think that's the hardest thing for us as solitaries to remember is, like you said earlier, nobody's judging
us.
Who's going to see us unless we're, you know, put a camera up in our
right?
house and people are, you know...
There's not a witch judge who's going to come in and say, like, you're doing your ancestor practice wrong.
Right.
Or if there are, I don't care. Like, you can tell me I'm doing my ancestor practice wrong all you want, but this is the only way my ancestor practice gets done.
Yeah.
And that's the important part, right, is that it gets done.
And I think that can stymie a lot of people, solitaries in particular, if you're judging yourself.
Yeah.
Because you can't do something in a particular way.
Yeah.
Or the way it was done in the books.
Yeah, or the way
it
was taught to you.
The way it was taught to you, but now you're doing it on your own.
Or the way you see people doing it on TikTok.
Exactly, exactly. You have to give yourself grace.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do all have our own limitations, whether it's time or energy.
Mental load.
Sleep deprivation.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it may be. We have kids.
Kids,
you know, for people who have small children.
Or any other obligation,
or
really.
Or any other obligation. We do have to, especially as solitaries, give ourselves some grace that we don't have to have it perfect every time.
Yeah. And I think there's some shame tied up in that for a
I
lot
think
of people.
So. It, yeah.
I know there was some shame tied up in it for me when I was trying to establish this practice. And I was like, all right, I'm going to be really good about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do it every week. I'm going to be really consistent. And then as soon as here's the problem, right, is because I had all this emotion tied up in it, the moment I failed, I was like, well, I guess I'm just not equipped to do this.
Right.
Right? Like, I guess I just can't do this. I'm not good enough to do this, right? Like, so
that
like...
imposter syndrome.
Exactly. That imposter syndrome builds up, that shame builds up. And that's why I say, like, I had to learn to be okay with just doing it when I remember instead of doing it on a schedule. I had to learn that, like, okay, well... I can either not have an ancestor practice, which is not what I want, or I can have the kind of ancestor practice I'm capable of.
And that it is adapted to you as a person.
Exactly.
As I can attest, it's a very enriching practice.
Mm-hmm. But you gotta make it work for you. And you gotta not get tied up in what other people might think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, again, who's going to know unless you tell them?
It's not their business.
It's not their business.
Right. I make it other people's business because I have a podcast. Right. But most of y'all solitaries do not have a podcast. So no one ever has to know.
Exactly. I think where it comes in is like you said, on TikTok, or you're talking to your witch friends, or you're seeing things on social media or in books or something, and you feel like perhaps, and I'm just projecting, you know, but it feels like if you're not living up to the standards put out by someone else, that you're not doing it right. Yeah. And so that's what we need to make accommodation for.
And on that note, Elle says, with the yoga example, I make adjustments even if a particular pose just doesn't feel good or I know something else will work better for me.
Mm-hmm.
Can I do Happy Baby? Yeah, but Cobbler's pose will be more fun and effective 99% of the time.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you adapt for what works best for you.
Mm-hmm. Even if it's not like, well, I could do this thing, it is possible for me to do this thing, I just won't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why are you making your spiritual practice something you won't like?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like, just
who's judging you other than yourself?
Exactly. Like, just because you can do something doesn't mean you have to do something, especially if it will cost you something to do.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, like, and I'm not saying that you should never do things in your spiritual or magical life that are costly in some way. Sometimes that can be really valuable, right? Like, that can be a sacrifice.
You can challenge yourself.
Exactly. To challenge yourself, to push yourself to do something that is difficult or will be unpleasant for you. That can be valuable in a spiritual practice, but it doesn't have to be the norm.
No, no.
And I don't think it should be the norm.
Well, like when I was starting out 6 years ago, well, Sarita D'Est is the person who started the Covenant of Hecate. And she challenged us to light a candle and say the Orphic Hymn to Hecate every day for 30 days. And that was challenging to do. And I managed to accomplish most of it. But I can't honestly say I did every single day.
See, I've run into this with NaNoWriMo all the time. Every year I try NaNoWriMo and every year I fail because, like, I'll get halfway through and then the first day that I don't get my words done, I'm just like, all right, well, that's it for NaNoWriMo.
right.
And I just stop.
Right.
But the goal I have been able to establish for myself for writing, which I shared with Gwen not too long ago, is that I will write one sentence a day.
Right.
Right? Like, I can't write 1,500 words every day, but I can write one sentence every day.
I have a challenge. That challenges me.
Yeah.
I have a hard time doing that.
Yeah. And it is a challenge sometimes, but, you know, it's a little stretch, right?
Yeah.
It's stretching myself a little bit to just push past the writer's block so that I get something done every day without setting myself this enormous goal that I know I can't reach.
Right.
Right. Or that I can only ever reach in small increments and never a month long increment.
Right. Right. Exactly. So I think that's why now in my practice, I don't do that every day.
Yeah.
I don't even light a candle every single day, but I will walk past her altar, and if I am thinking about it, I will do it.
Yeah.
You know, or I do a short little blessing instead, or something along those lines, or just hail. And,
something,
you know,
something less involved.
Yep. Or just by acknowledging her presence, just by looking at her, at her, the statue I have of her, and looking at her altar and thinking, oh, I really should replace those flowers.
Right. Just being present.
Being present in that moment. And it may only be a moment, but that still is, that works for me.
Yeah. It's the level of commitment you can have to your practice.
And, yep, on that day.
On a daily basis. Yeah. I think that's, it's also useful to understand that, yeah, like your ability to commit will fluctuate, right? It'll it'll ebb and flow.
Yep.
Not even just in terms of like, oh, well, you'll have a fallow period. You will. But sometimes day to day, your level and capacity for commitment will fluctuate.
Yep.
And you just have to, you just got to be chill with that.
Yeah, you do. You just got to be okay with it.
Githa says, this is directly helping with my recent mental block of feeling bad that I've not been able to keep up with regular offerings to Freya, spiraling to, oh no, she's going to be mad. The idea of focusing on when I remember versus you have to do it every week on this day honestly didn't occur to me. Yeah, mm-hmm. I have honestly found, at least in my practice, that my gods and spirits aren't upset as long as when I remember, I give them my attention.
Exactly. That is what I have found in my own practice with all the deities that I work with.
Yeah.
I think part of it for me, getting over the hump of organized religion and the previous deity that I worshipped for 30 years, there was a tremendous amount of guilt in, you know, inherent in that religion that I think sometimes I still to this day will bring over and go, oh, wait, no. Just because that deity reacted that way doesn't mean this one will.
Yeah. That, you know, each deity is their own individual, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So there may be some deities who are going to be like real strict about, and that may vary from relationship to relationship, right? Like Hera may be real strict with one person. Like, yeah, I want weekly offerings of this the same way every time, at the same time every week.
Right.
And then with another person, she may be much more relaxed.
Exactly.
Right. And your relationship may change, like Hecate's did with Gwyn, where she was real strict in the beginning because she was sort of establishing some rules and behaviors. And then once Mom had proved that she could and would follow through with that, those restrictions relaxed.
Yep.
So those kinds of things can change even inside of a relationship with a deity. But yeah, I think at least my experience has been that the only time they are irritated with me is when I remember and then I don't do it.
Right.
Right? Like when I remember or my attention is drawn to the altar or I can feel a ping, like them saying like, hey, I want this thing from you. And then I just decline. Then they get annoyed with me.
Yeah.
Because it's actively ignoring them as opposed to just like the distraction of my everyday life.
Right. Thanks to our Tiger Solinox for introducing us to Weavers of the Web, an interfaith pagan ATC, Aquarian Tabernacle Church, organization based in Lansing, Michigan. Weavers of the Web is a public Wiccan church that aims to be family-friendly, supportive, and informative, with the goal of ensuring that no one ever need be alone in their spiritual needs. Weavers is currently raising funds for the down payment on a property, which would allow them to expand their current network of resources, including dedicated community space, a permanent home for a Pagans in Need pantry, and a lending library. Join them online or in person for regular events, including rituals and discussion groups, at weaversoftheweb.org or on Facebook at facebook.com/weaversATC.
Hail Dictinus!
Hail Dictinus! I'm going to make some smoke. And then we've talked a lot about relationships with and ritual with deity. What about magic?
Yeah. So
witchcraft. Doing the witchy things.
Doing witchy things. There are a lot of, I think, norms in magical spaces, the same way there are in, like, religiously pagan spaces.
Right.
And I think some of that is from the 100 bajillion 101 books that exist.
Yes, we do have a lot of 101s.
And you'll notice a lot of them repeat a lot of the same instructions, or they repeat a lot of the same routines, right? So, like, there will be a section on visualization. There will be a section on candle magic. There will be a section on incantations, right? And all these things are useful in magic. But none of them are irreplaceable.
Right.
And I think there's a tendency to think that, like, each thing has its job, and that job can't be replaced. Wholeheartedly disagree.
Right.
Every, like, I believe every aspect of a magical practice can be replaced, or in some cases, like we talked about, just cut out.
Or adapted to work better for you. Like, we've talked about this before. There's a lot of people who have trouble with visualization.
Yes.
That can be very challenging. Even for people who don't have aphantasia.
Yeah, some people just struggle to visualize. And visualization is it's described as such a key part of magic, right? Like, even when the visualization isn't described as, like, a spiritual practice, mm-hmm. right? It'll be described as part of setting your intention for a spell, right? Mm-hmm. It'll be like, okay, if you're doing a job magic, visualize yourself in the job, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've preached that myself.
visualize yourself doing the job, mm-hmm. and visualize yourself getting the paycheck and putting mm-hmm. it in the bank, and visualize all the things you'll be able to get with that money, and mm-hmm. visualize what kind of coworkers you'll have and what relationships you'll, right? Like, mm-hmm. visualize all these things. Which is basically, visualization is active imagination,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because visualization is difficult for people, this mm-hmm. becomes an immediate stumbling block for a lot of people.
A barrier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really does. It becomes a barrier. I know a lot of people who are just like, well, I can't do magic. I can't visualize.
Yes, exactly.
So I can't do magic. Because it's so ingrained and embedded in mm-hmm. how people who can visualize think of magic.
Right.
So I was thinking about using that equation, like, what is the purpose of visualization? And I think it has multiple purposes depending on what it's doing in each particular instance, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it can be to focus your attention or your energy. It can be to create a spiritual space. Mm-hmm. It can be, you know, to perform a variety of functions. Mm-hmm. The function that made the most sense to me was that the purpose of visualization, very broadly, mm-hmm. is to create a sense for you, mm-hmm. a sense experience of a thing you want.
Yep.
Whether that is a spiritual space, a future outcome, a magical intention, it's to create a sensory impression of a thing. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, how do you create a sensory impression of a thing without visualization? And I think there are a variety of ways you could approach that, but the one that made sense to me was physical performance. Mm-hmm. So, and this is partly because I sometimes combine physical performance with visualization. So, like, I will physically walk my body through the steps of something I'm visualizing. Mm-hmm. I think you can do that without visualization, mm-hmm. right? We'll go back to that job magic mm-hmm. Spell, right? If you're doing a job magic spell and the instructions are visualize yourself in this job, visualize getting the check, blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah. Instead of trying to visualize all that, mm-hmm. which you know you can't do or is going to be a tremendous struggle for you, mm-hmm. make up a little fake check for yourself.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Right? And yep. and receive that fake check for yourself, turn it over, mm-hmm. sign it. Make all your little, you know, and then, like, do your little, take a little photo of it with your phone the way you would, like, because I do online banking. Take a little photo with my phone to do my online deposit. Mm-hmm. walk your, like, physically perform as if you were an actor. Mm-hmm. Like, walk up to the door and open it and do your little interview chit-chat. Mm-hmm. And if you're aiming for, like, an office job, find a little desk space for yourself and go sit down at your desk and pretend you're performing office mm-hmm. tasks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, walk yourself physically through all the things that you would do mm-hmm. in a visualization.
Exactly.
Right?
Oh, Amara asks, would worded descriptive petitions work instead of visualization? I think that would as well.
100%, yes.
Write it. If you're a wordsmith or, mm-hmm. or somebody mm-hmm. who likes to have written words, write it out.
Write
what
it
is you want, what kind of check you want to receive, or just write it as a story mm-hmm. that of you. Instead, if you don't want to, if you're not able to act it out, write it out
yep.
of yourself getting, you know, having the interview, mm-hmm. getting the job, doing the task.
Write it out as a little story
exactly.
or write it as a series of bullet points
exactly.
or whatever.
Whatever would work for you, mm-hmm. write it out. And
yeah.
then I would say that's when you start to perform your, you roll that little thing up.
Mm-hmm.
You tie it with some green thread.
Put it on your little altar.
On your little altar. Maybe add some herbs mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. are associated with money and success mm-hmm. and wealth and abundance.
Get some ginger in there.
Get some ginger. Get some cinnamon. What's another good one? Oh, some bergamot for it to be swift and strong.
Yep. If you don't have bergamot, you can just use orange.
Orange. Yep. There's lots of things that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
So you can accommodate this idea of visualization in other ways.
In these other forms. Yeah, exactly.
Speak the words. You know, the job I want is this, and mm-hmm. I will go to this interview and I will do my best and I will ask good questions of my employer so mm-hmm. that I have discernment and know if this job is right for me. Mm-hmm. And I will ask for this amount of pay and they will agree to pay me this amount.
Exactly, exactly.
And my start date will be thus and so. You know, put that all out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the function of visualization is to clarify those desires, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to actualize those yep. desires, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anything you can do that can clarify and actualize those desires mm-hmm. is going to fulfill the same function as visualization.
Yep.
You're just doing it. You're just approaching it differently.
Yep. And then after, as I said, after you've done the thing mm-hmm. that helps you to visualize this, then
replaces
visualization, then you can add your other magical elements to mm-hmm. support mm-hmm. and magnify and send it out into the world with your plant allies, with your color magic, with, mm-hmm. you know, if candle magic, if that's what...
If that's
appropriate for you. You can enhance this desire
right.
with different things.
With all the other tools.
With all the other tools. Yeah, exactly.
Something else I thought about was, like, we talk about candle magic as being one of the most sort of beginner accessible forms of magic.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that's true. It is a very beginner accessible form of magic. But it's maybe not useful or as useful for someone who has a visual impairment
mm-hmm.
because sort of the point of candle magic is to light it on fire and then sit there and focus your intention on it, right? Mm-hmm. Part of it is watching the candle.
Or choose colors.
Exactly.
And if someone is colorblind, yeah. that makes it very challenging.
Challenging or just not useful.
Not useful.
So I was thinking, okay, well, what is the purpose of a candle spell? It is to... focus your intention on a desired outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we have that can replace that that's not visually focused? Not magic. Mm-hmm. The whole point of not magic, which if you go back and listen to, I think, our textiles
yeah.
mm-hmm. Episode we talk about there, the whole point of not magic is to focus your intention into these knots.
Mm-hmm.
So if a spell calls for candle magic, but for whatever reason, either because you have a visual impairment or because you can't do... candles in your space or whatever.
Because, mm-hmm. There's a lot of reasons why candles are not.
A lot of reasons, yeah, that candles might be inaccessible to you for
right.
some reason.
Mm-hmm.
But if candle magic isn't accessible to you, that doesn't mean the spell isn't accessible to you.
Mm-hmm.
It just means you replace the candle with something else, like tying knots in yarn or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Creating a witch's ladder.
Exactly, exactly. There's always something you can replace
mm-hmm.
a particular magical tool or mm-hmm. performance with.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just you need to know what your options are.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to perform a spell exactly as it's written,
mm-hmm.
right? Or mm-hmm. even perform a spell exactly the way you performed it in the past. You can adapt it to your current circumstances mm-hmm. and it'll still work.
Another way to visualize what you want to accomplish with your spell, and we've used this technique before, tarot cards.
Oh, yeah.
You can pull out the tarot card that is specific to, that is most representative of what you need and what you are trying to accomplish with your spell.
Mm-hmm.
That becomes... your intention, your focus, and then
your visualizer
right there in front of you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you make that part of the spell.
Yeah. Or for that matter, a lot of people use the practice of, what are they called? Personal signifiers.
Yes.
They have a card in the tarot deck that represents them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you need, if you're doing a spell that requires some interaction with yourself,
mm-hmm.
right? Like if you need to be anointed, but you're going to break out to this anointing oil, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or you're going to have an allergic reaction to it or something.
Mm-hmm.
But you really want to use this anointing oil. Well, don't anoint yourself then. Pull out find a personal
yep.
signifier. That could be a tarot card. That can be a little poppet you made. That
mm-hmm.
can be, you know, a stone you're attached to. Whatever.
Whatever.
Find a personal signifier. Assign that thing you.
Mm-hmm.
And then... anoint that.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And
do whatever needs to be done to you to this signifier object.
And don't forget that water is also a good option.
Yes, is also a perfectly good
yep.
anointing. But like if there's a specific oil
that
want to use
yep.
for some reason.
You use a substitute
exactly.
that is a stand-in.
Exactly.
Yep. The other thing that is often talked about is that as part of a witchcraft practice
mm-hmm.
is meditation.
And
yes. not everybody can meditate.
No, a lot of people struggle with that.
It can be very challenging. And, you know, you get these, I know when I started, it's like, I I taught myself to meditate for 30 minutes mm-hmm. in the morning, 30 minutes in the evening. That's not easy,
that's
y'all.
That's challenging.
That's challenging. And
a lot of people jump too into deep with
yes,
meditation. You should
yes.
really be starting with like a 5 minute,
5 minutes
max.
And but it's okay if you never grow beyond the 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? But here's the
and
other
thing.
And
it's okay if you never meditate.
Exactly. And here's the other thing too. If you want to have a meditation practice, but mm-hmm. it's challenging for you, guided meditations.
Or walking meditations.
Walking meditations.
Or yeah, there are so many different kinds of meditation. First mm-hmm. of all, not every meditation is even intended to like empty your mind.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think like, oh,
no.
meditation is about emptying your mind and having no
that's
thoughts.
That's because that's what Hollywood teaches.
Right. But that's actually just a very specific form
yep.
of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And most people don't accomplish it.
Yeah.
Most like monks who spend their lives dedicated to it don't ever accomplish a fully empty mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's bodhisattva shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, most people do not get to that point.
Yep.
So, like, there are all different kinds of meditation. Even if you can't sit still, even if you can't focus on just your thoughts or on emptying your mind of thoughts, there's probably some kind, mm-hmm. some style of meditation that will work better for you.
Yeah.
It's a matter of finding mm-hmm. what that thing is, which is a matter of experimenting.
Exactly. And sometimes it's just listening to music.
Mm-hmm.
And getting into the flow and the vibe
yes.
of that music. You know, it can be chant. It can be mm-hmm. Any kind of music.
It can be death metal, whatever.
It can be death metal. Yeah, whatever it is that's going to bring you to that space
mm-hmm.
where you are part of
right.
your spiritual experience.
Right,
you know?
because in...
Or your magical experience.
Exactly. So, like, for meditation in a magical
yeah.
sense, aside from meditation as its own religious practice,
right.
which it
right.
is. Like,
it is.
Meditation is its own whole separate religious practice, mostly in India
right.
and China.
Mm-hmm.
But meditation used in a magical sense is usually intended to induce an altered state of consciousness
mm-hmm.
of some kind, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's intended to move you to a different spiritual
yep.
or mental or emotional space.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, anything that can move you to a different spiritual, mental, or emotional space
mm-hmm.
is going to be useful for that. That can be music, that can be dancing, that mm-hmm. can be legal drugs in your area. if you live in a place where THC is legal, that could be useful in
yep.
this context. Or even, you know, alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
We do drink divination for a reason.
Yes, we do.
Getting a little bit drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Just...
tipsy.
Just sort of puts your brain in that whole different space. Right? It's a cheat.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shortcut.
Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No. As long as you do it, you know, responsibly.
Yes, exactly.
But there are all kinds of ways that you can do this without meditation
mm-hmm.
or as an assistance to meditation,
mm-hmm.
right?
And there's also this idea that you have to do releasing the energy in a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to whip yourself up into a frenzy or, you know,
uh-huh.
whatever. Not necessarily.
No.
There are so many ways to raise energy.
One of Gwyn's favorites is with a pendulum.
Yep, yep. Just use that. I learned that from my friend Amy.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, she taught me just let the pendulum go around in a circle
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And raise the energy that way. And then when you are ready, I just put the pendulum down and I use my hands to just push it out,
mm-hmm.
you know, push it up and out. And I don't think you have to necessarily be jumping around or dancing.
Right.
You if that's hard for you or
you
don't have the
ways.
Space.
Yeah. Yes.
If you don't have the space to
the
do
physical
the
space
physical
in your
location, you're not able to do some of these more active mm-hmm. types of energy raising. Pendulum is a wonderful way. And
I personally just raise energy from stones.
There
like
you
I
go.
Just borrow like carnelian is
yeah.
my go-to when I need energy to do something. Carnelian
mm-hmm.
always has a bucket load, so I just ask for some.
Exactly. Exactly. So there's multiple ways to raise energy that is just as effective as what you can see happening in a big group.
Mhm. Mhm. Rhiannon says, my latest meditation I've been doing is turning on music and just watching my ceiling. My friends got me one of those light projectors that sign like a night sky or aurora
oh,
thing in different colors. Yeah, that could be a great meditation.
That's very cool.
For that matter, even just going outside, lying down in the grass and watching the night
yeah.
sky could be a great meditation.
Or if you have access to natural spaces, mm-hmm. you know, just sit just, down. Just
Or just walking through.
Just walking through a natural space. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things to do, especially to raise energy or if I'm going to be working with, you know, doing natural magic with nature spirits, which I do a lot of. Mm-hmm.
Your go-to thing.
Just my go-to thing with the plants and everything. Just to stand with my feet on mm-hmm. the ground in the grass.
Yeah.
Or stand next to a tree and put my hands on it and just feel the vibration of mm-hmm. all of it.
Yeah.
You know, just, feel that energy.
Vibe with the energy.
Vibe with the energy. You know, there's lots of different things you can do. Mm-hmm. Lots of different things. And you just adapt. If you don't have the energy, borrow it from something else.
Yeah. Like I said, I do that all the time.
Yeah.
When I lost my carnelian, I actually went on a quest to find a new carnelian that could mm-hmm. replace it because it was like, it's my go-to secondary energy source and I needed it. So yeah, find something like that mm-hmm. can be an energy bank for you or an assistant for you.
I've probably talked about this before. Another thing that I used to love to do when I had a yard where mm-hmm. I could go out, because I got this idea from Kara Sedgwick's character in Phenomenon, a movie from years and years ago. She was watching the trees sway back and forth and mm-hmm. started rocking her body to the same rhythm. And so rocking is an excellent way to raise energy, to bring yourself into a meditative
state,
an altered state. And it's a great way to tune into what's around you, mm-hmm. especially in nature. Because as you are rocking, I wouldn't close my eyes. I'd just be looking at the trees or, mm-hmm. you know, just kind of have my gaze on one thing. And then I would tune into its energy as well.
Yeah. No, I rock back and forth to switch altered states all the mm-hmm. time because I have limited space in my ritual area. Mm-hmm. So yeah, when I want to enter an altered state and I would under ideal circumstances, maybe I would be doing a circle dance or something, but I don't mm-hmm. have space for that.
Yeah.
I just sit down, rock back and forth at mm-hmm. a particular rhythm mm-hmm. and just wait until I hit the right speed, I guess. Uh-huh. Like there's just a particular point where it just sort of a switch flips and I have entered a spirit state.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and then you can go forward with your mm-hmm. ritual, your magic, you know.
Your journey, whatever it is
you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But yeah, it's you find ways to accommodate yourself, your limitations that you may mm-hmm. or may not have, whether it's physical or spatial.
Because that is the thing. Not every access issue is about a physical access issue.
It could be just space.
Yeah, it can just be environmental.
Mm-hmm. Or if you're sharing a place with people who
are in the broom closet.
Yeah, you're in the broom closet, but you're trying to find ways to access your magic, mm-hmm. to cast your spells mm-hmm. in your life and in your practice. There are ways to do it just silently.
Subtly, silently.
You can work through those things and be creative. What works for you?
Exactly.
These are just suggestions.
Yeah. This is stuff that works for us by and large.
Yeah.
Or stuff we're theorizing about for maybe in the future, this will be an issue for me. What will mm-hmm. I replace it with?
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that I think, again, it behooves us to think about before you run into the issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Think about why you do things the way you do them
mm-hmm.
and how else you could do them if you had mm-hmm. to.
I've been thinking about this too, because I have had a spell that I wrote for Jason's book mm-hmm. that was a healing spell and included an apple.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And now in that one I had a candle and I had bay leaves stuffed into it and stuff. Mm-hmm. But who's to say you couldn't just boil that apple or bake it and eat it?
I love the idea of a baked apple healing spell.
Because you put cinnamon on it.
Yep. So much good shit in a baked apple.
So much good shit into a baked apple.
You put some good honey. You put some good butter. You put some cinnamon, some ginger.
Yep. All these things that are healing to the body. And you
bake it.
There's your fire element.
Mm-hmm.
And then you consume it.
You take that magic into you
because apples are inherently magical in mm-hmm. my opinion mm-hmm. because they've got that pentacle right in the center.
That was one of the first things you ever taught me.
Yes.
Back when I was 11 years old
mm-hmm.
and you were on one of your early witch phases mm-hmm. and I wasn't technically supposed to be learning, but you did tell me that apples are magic because they have pentacles
in
them.
That's right. They have pentacles in them and they're wonderful for a variety of different types of magic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's oranges are also another wonderful healing magic.
Oranges are also great for just wealth, prosperity.
Yeah, wealth and prosperity. You can work any kind of fruit or vegetable any kind, especially if you are in a situation where maybe you don't have other types of tools,
other things available,
but you got stuff in your refrigerator.
Kitchen Witchery is so accessible.
Yes, and your spices in your cabinet.
This
all
is
kinds
another thing too. Like, we're just talking about how accessible Kitchen Witchery is, but like if you have an access issue with something that is assigned, right, like a particular role in Kitchen Witchery, you can just replace it.
Mm-hmm.
Just the same you would with any other cooking. Like, I am not going to eat a broccoli. I don't care if the broccoli isn't a magic. I'm going to replace it with an asparagus or something. I'll find something to replace the broccoli with that will perform the same broccoli function. So this is actually maybe a really interesting way to think about it. Think of magic as cooking, right? You're taking all these ingredients and you're combining them and trying to get a delicious end result, right? Which in this case is a magical outcome. The spell that you are given is the recipe. But no one says you have to follow that recipe word for word in your own damn kitchen.
That's why we always encourage people, you know, if there's correspondences in their plants or herbs or stones or whatever that don't align with your intention of what it is you want to accomplish and it just doesn't feel right,
then just replace it.
Then just replace it with what feels right. I do that all the damn time.
Yeah. But I think people think of the spell as more like a baking recipe than a cooking recipe. Now, the difference between cooking and baking is that baking is much easier to screw up and it's got a lot more science
There's
and chemistry
more science,
involved, right? Cooking is very adaptable. Baking is less adaptable. But even with baking, if you understand what all the ingredients do,
and the
you
proportions.
Can replace them.
Yep. And you know how to put it all together.
If you know what each ingredient is doing in the recipe. And why it's there, you can replace it with something else. So magic is the same way. If you understand what each piece is doing, you can replace it. If you don't understand what it's doing, you're going to find that more challenging. But as long as you understand the function of each piece in a spell, you can replace it.
Absolutely. And you can replace it with what speaks to you or what you have available.
Some of it, I think, is, it's a mental shift of just being willing to be flexible about it, being willing to make those adjustments and not judge each other on what those adjustments are, right?
Don't, you know, we have so much of that, especially in the witch community, judging each other or judging ourselves by what someone else is doing. That's a temptation.
Yeah. And there's a tendency, there's a temptation for sure to be really rigid about what's possible. Or about like, well, this is how it works for me. I've confirmed that it works this way for me, which means it must work this way for everybody else.
And that's just not true.
That's just... in practice, not how it is.
I look at every book that I've got, and I've got a lot of books of spells and witchcraft and all kinds of different things. But I look at each component as a suggestion, not a rule.
And I think there is a tendency with those books to they're written authoritatively.
Yes, they are.
And I understand why that's done. An authoritative text is more compelling, right? It's going to sell better. But I think in some ways that is doing us all a disservice, right? I think we need to all be a little more comfortable with not being experts.
And of course, we remind you that this is an episode that is geared towards solitaries. This is, you know, your own personal practice.
Only person judging you is you and your spirits.
Yeah, exactly.
Another person's opinion really shouldn't come into it.
Yeah. The only time this would maybe not be part of the equation is if you are in a specific tradition.
And even then, I would say you should be able to adapt your tradition to your needs.
And definitely.
If your tradition can't be adapted to your needs,
then maybe
you
need
a different
tradition. Yeah.
You know? Or maybe that tradition needs to be reformed.
Yes, exactly.
Which is the case in a lot of in a lot of traditions.
They're working on it, hopefully.
Fingers crossed. I don't know. I'm not in any of them, so I can't say.
Yep.
Want to read a diverse and inclusive fantasy that's pagan-friendly? Check out Arrow's Flight by M.B. Strang. Arrow's Flight, an unknown menace moves through the polite society of Pearl's Holding. If not caught in time, it will bring down not just the hallowed knights of the Pearl Order, but also everyone who lives and works with them. The answer lies with a young woman who's of mysterious origins, whose life has been touched by tragedy. To fulfill her potential, she must confront her past and discover a future more amazing than she'd ever imagined, and find the inner strength to fly. She's not alone. A handful of knights, a hearth mage, and their magical companions all test their physical and magical limits to make things right before it's too late. Otherwise, dark forces will overtake the knights for good. Go to mbstrang.com for details on ordering your copy now. Scroll down to the bottom of the main page to sign up for the newsletter and receive a free story.
Hail Dictinus.
Hail Dictinus.
More smoke.
More smoke. Speaking of smoke, there are plenty of people who have allergies.
Yep.
Or sensitivities that will not permit them to use incense or essential oils.
Mm-hmm. Or candles that have
or
scent.
Or candles that have scent, or even that just create smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And in those cases, again, you can find alternatives.
Find alternatives. Nobody said you have to have scent mm-hmm. as part of your practice.
Nope.
You can. Nobody said you have to have herbs or oils or anything. It's mm-hmm. it's completely what works for and with you.
Yeah. The vast majority of stuff in magic is optional.
Yep.
It will serve some function. Just figure out what that function is.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't like what's currently serving that function, find some other way to perform it.
That's right.
A lot of that is just knowing what all your options are, right? It's just mm-hmm. sort of building a big enough mental catalog of mm-hmm. all the things you could be doing
mm-hmm.
and what the jobs of all those things are so that you can kind of plug and play.
Exactly. Exactly.
So hopefully somewhere in our 262 prior episodes, you will be able to find a big enough mental catalog of all the things you can use.
That's right. That's right.
All right. But I think that's it for this episode.
I think we've covered as much as we are going to be able to
cover. As much as we're equipped to cover.
Yep.
Because we aren't experts either.
No, we are not. We're just doing our best.
Yeah. So I hope this episode was interesting and useful. And we will see you again in 2 weeks. Once again, remember that the off week is going to be happening in the Discord, in the off week discussions channel. And it is going to be Githa who will be teaching about brewing.
Mm-hmm. And Ode is going to put a link to
yes,
the Discord.
There will be a link to the Discord in the episode description.
There you go.
So whatever you use to listen to the episode, find the description wherever it is on your app and click that link.
That's right.
And go to the Discord.
Okay. That's right.
You can find us on the search engine of your choice. If you search the number 3 and the words pagans and a cat, or the number 3 and the letters P-A-A-C, you can also find us online at the3pagansandacat.com, where we have links to the things we do, including our Patreon, where you can help support us, for which we are, as always, very grateful.
Extremely grateful.
You help us pay rent.
Yes, you do.
which
keeps this podcast going.
Uh-huh. And you can also find the archives of Gwyn's Patheos Pagan blog linked there. And you can also find Gwyn on TikTok, where she does TikTok things.
That's right.
And I think that's all the things that we do.
Currently, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Then we will see you 2 weeks from now.
So go be imaginative and creative.
Yes. Go examine your magical practices and ask why you do these things.
Why
you do them this way.
And how can you make them more personal and accessible mm-hmm. to yourself?
What are your alternatives?
That's right.